Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now the Brian Lehrer Show meets Studio 360, WNYC's weekly show about the arts with a creative listeners poll. With us are Studio 360 host and general eyebrow raiser Kurt Anderson and Studio 360 creator and former executive producer Julie Burstein. As you may have heard elsewhere on the station, Julie has written a book called Spark, How Creativity Works. Kurt wrote a foreword to the book and is otherwise out there in the world doing what Kurt Anderson does, like his New York Magazine article recently, imagining, what if Al Gore had become president 10 years ago instead of George Bush? We will talk to Julie and Kurt and throw out some questions for you all to answer about how you find your creative spark to get that going. Here's a short clip from Studio 360 of the writer Isabel Allende on how it works for her, which is kind of like inspiration, schminspiration, just get to work. She starts a new novel every year on January 8th.
I haven't finished the one that I started this year, but I'm going to start another book all the same, because if I don't start on January 8th, I will probably not write it. I want to start something and then finish what I'm doing and then go back to the book that I will start next year. But I'm still doubting. About what that book will be about. Can you imagine what January 7th is like in my life?
Isabel Allende there, Julie Burstein, and Kurt Anderson here. Hi, welcome to the weekdays.
It's lovely to be here.
Hi, Brian. And in addition, of course, to raising eyebrows and writing the foreword of the book, I did most of those interviews that make up the book as well, just for the record.
For the record, that little act of being the host of a show, which, of course, I would never dismiss or downgrade.
There you go. Don't we have a union or something?
What's wonderful about that clip from Isabel Allende is I think all of us can imagine what her January 7th is like. And what's interesting is she focuses her creativity by having this kind of ritual of, I have to do it on this particular day, which I think is part of how some people's creativity works, is they have to really create a structure.
And the last chapter of your book is called Getting to Work and includes the Isabel Allende clip that we just heard. Is the way Isabel Allende works typical or unusual, Kurt, in your experience with creative people?
Well, most people have some rituals of discipline, some more superstitious than others. Hers, fittingly, given the kind of work she tends to do, is a little more superstitious. But yeah, I think successful creative people who are successful over the long term all have various strictures, structures, rituals. It's usually not as specific as I start my paintings at 4:30 p.m. or I start my novels on January 8th, but absolutely, I think they do. And that's the degree in which even the most thinky, dreamy kinds of creators who search for inspiration in unconventional ways still, you know, have a strict sense, which they think of it as a job they need to go do. Chuck Close, Julie has in the book, and said to me when we talked, you know, inspiration is for amateurs. I just get to work.
Yeah, so she's like that. But Julie, Joyce Carol Oates tells Kurt on the show, and it's in the book, just the opposite. She doesn't start writing something until she's done all her thinking and dreaming for as long as it takes and sees the whole picture in her head before she puts word to paper.
Yes, and that I think is true of every artist at a different phase. I think there's an R&D phase of creativity.
Yes.
And that even someone like Isabel Allende has an R&D phase. She knows she's going to sit down on January 8th, but that's an essential piece, is that sort of being open to the world and really taking in what's going around. And I think that's not just true of artists, it's all of us. We need to really pay attention to what's happening around us. As Kurt, as you often say, to fill up the pantry of ideas to then be able to go and create something.
So listeners...
And the other thing is, I mean, when we talk about the inspiration phase and the hard work phase, in every creative person's case, I think, it's not 6 months of one and then 3 months of the other.
They happen at the same time.
Toggling back and forth during the whole process.
So here's another option. from the book, and we have it as a clip from Studio 360. The sculptor Richard Serra was talking to Kurt and describes what he and his assistant call their 4 o'clock problem when they run out of ideas. So what do?
We'd get on the ferry or we'd get on a subway, because we found that if we took ourselves out of the studio and got into a space where you didn't have to walk and you were being transported, that actually ideas were exchanged more rapidly. So we used to take ferryboat rides. Sounds strange, but we did. Or we used to get on the subway and just ride back and forth and then go back to the studio, just to get ourselves in a different mindset.
So, Julie, I love that. Run out of ideas, go take the subway.
Exactly. And I liked that he doesn't like walking. He likes to be able to take a transportation. And what's interesting, too, this is about his early days as a sculptor, and his assistant was Phil Glass, who we now know as Philip Glass, the composer.
Really?
Who was Philip Glass, the plumber at that time, working also with Richard Serra and writing music, of course.
You know, I'm glad you picked up on that. And, Kurt, I love that idea that Richard Serra stated there of getting into a space where you don't have to walk that specifically, but are being transported. I've had that thought and feeling myself. I love taking a bus or a train rather than driving, say, for exactly that reason. When I'm driving, I have to focus relentlessly on the road, no creativity
Absolutely.
There. On a bus or a train, or I guess ferry boat, which was their other example,
yes.
The mind can wander and find a spark.
And I think...
Well, it's one of the great beauties of New York City, isn't it? I'm in Los Angeles right now, and I feel when I'm driving, those hours are taken away from me for exactly that kind of creative private brainstorming. Whereas you're riding along on the 4 train, you can think all you want.
I think the idea of getting away from your problem, too, is so important. And I think that that's true for all of us in whatever it is we do, that often we try to hit our head against the problem, but the best thing is to just get away from it for a while and fill up on other things and then get back.
Steve in Manhattan, getting to work, thinking and dreaming, or something else entirely?
Well, literally dreaming. My first book, which took 13 years, started out as a dream. Then I made it into a screenplay, and the characters and the settings haunted me. And I just couldn't release it, so I ended up writing it as a book. The thinking, the research, all pre-internet, or mostly pre-internet, just drove me crazy. I just couldn't get it out of my mind. The second book only took 4 years, but again, all thinking. I gave birth to characters. I knocked them off. I gave birth to new characters. Thinking is the only way the creative process can be driven forward.
All right. Thank you very much. Peter in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Well, I could totally be a brown noser and say I have to be listening to the Brian Lehrer Show in order to be creative.
But then you'd be
which I do always have it going on while I am cooking. I'm a chef.
But you'd be completely discredited, so go on to something else.
But I got to tell you that my ritual, and I'm sort of kind of a ritual person, is if I need to be creative, I have to be clean shaven. I have to shave my face in the morning, and oddly, and it's not about the alcohol, because I would need more, but it's a single shot of vodka, and without that, I need my creative juices flowing, and that's the way it goes.
There you go. There's another question, Kurt. Substance or no substance? There's a passage in the book with Mira Nair.
Yes.
The director, right, who talks about how in India when she grew up as a child, she would watch all these traveling plays come in and everybody was stoned.
Passion and hashish,
everybody was
smoking
hashish, she says. Yes.
But, all right, Michael in Bloomfield, you're on WNYC. Thinking and dreaming, getting down to work, or something else?
Pretty much just getting down to work. I am an artist who's now a furniture designer as well as a sculptor, and when I went to design school, the thing that shifted for me in the way that I was taught and the way that I thought was that a designer gets given a problem to solve and says, yes, I can solve that problem, where an artist sits back and waits for the inspiration to, come and help them approach that problem. And I think that just sort of saying that, you know, yes, I can, and not to paraphrase anybody else, and set down to work and do it.
That's so interesting. Julie, what do you think about that distinction between an artist is somebody who creates and a designer is somebody who solves problems?
I think, you know, it's who comes up with the problems to solve. And so you can be both. You can be both the artist and the designer in that you have to figure out what that problem is rather than be given it and say, yes, I can design that. And I think that that's true in so many different professions as well as in art and music. It's coming up with the problem is often much harder than figuring out how to solve it.
All right, listeners, we'll
Although
take
I think that's
it.
What you said is exactly right, is that most artists, in fact, I think, are engaged in inventing problems for themselves
right.
to solve and inventing, you know, new and more complicated problems in order to keep themselves interested. Mm. So, but yes, that distinction is valid as well. And of course, designers by and large have clients or bosses who give them the problems. And that is absolutely a distinction, which doesn't mean they're less creative. It's just a more focused problem solution process.
Allison in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. I'm a wildlife artist. So my initial inspiration comes from sketching wildlife in Africa, but I have to maintain that when I get back here. And the way I do that is actually to go out for a walk, and that's where I find my creative spark to compose my new paintings. So that might fall into the thinking and dreaming category.
And it sounds solitary.
Sorry.
Solitary. It's solitary. It's all
solitary,
with you.
Yes. Uh-huh. But when I find the idea, I'm then going, you know, I'm actively choosing to do that. I'm not waiting for inspiration to strike me. And when I have the idea, I'm going to be very businesslike when I get back into the studio and make sure I'm spending enough time to actually produce the painting.
Thinking and dreaming and then get to work.
Neil
in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hi, Neil.
Yes, I'm a journalist, which to a certain extent I'm able to still do good journalism while I listen to Brian Lehrer and Laird Lopate. But for real creativity, I used to depend upon running. You know that saying, meditate for the body, exercise for the mind. And running takes one to a separate place where you could take a step back and think things without immediate daily pressure.
Yes, I share that with you.
And unfortunately, I had an accident a few years ago, and now I have to find substitutes for that because that was how I did some of my most off-beaten creative thinking or evaluated situations.
And so what have you substituted for running?
Well, I bicycle a lot, but bicycling in traffic in New York City, you don't want to zone out because that's how you get killed.
Indeed. I think I know who you are. I saw you on your bike at the Brooklyn Museum recently, right?
Correct, yes.
Yes, thank you for calling.
That's something that there's actually scientific research that says exercise and moving and being outdoors can enhance the parts of the brain that allow you to think beyond what you already know, to really be creative. So that makes so much sense. And a lot of artists in Spark talk about that, about running or getting outside.
But also he brings up the notion, Kurt, of creativity lost. And he's trying to get it back.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people have that. And a lot of writers I know feel torn and besieged by the no longer solitary act of writing on a computer, it's because you're hooked up to the internet and the being joining a coffee klatch effectively virtually all the time is there as a risk. And I actually do think that is a way to lose creative solitude that creative writers find necessary.
Let's add another wrinkle to this creative listeners poll. Does your creativity come more from experiencing the beautiful or more from experiencing the terrible? Here is the poet Donald Hall, who has written poetry about his wife's illness and death. He had just done a reading and was asked on the show how he could read poems about his wife's illness and death out loud.
I have no difficulty reading them aloud. They have become poems. They start out as screams of pain, and as I work on them, they will come to be something outside me. It is as if I were working with hacking away at a piece of stone to make sculpture or modeling or trying to paint, adding a little paintbrush here and there, adding a little dash of this and that, so that they become works of art. They become a work of art in the art that I love, that I've tried to practice since I was 12 years old. Then they are objectified. They're out there. They start from the pain. They start from the anguish, these poems do. And then they become something that means to be in itself as language, as sound, as imagery, objects of pleasure, objects that give pleasure.
Poet Donald Hall on Studio 360. We're with Studio 360 host Kurt Anderson and the show's creator, Julie Burstein, author of Spark, How Creativity Works, And Julia, I was struck by how much the stories of accomplished artists in the book linked creativity to trouble and suffering. Donald Hall, a perfect example.
Well, I think what it says to me when I look at all these stories is one of the essential things that you need to do to create is to embrace what life gives you. And for all of us, that includes loss and suffering. And so what these artists are able to do is go into that experience and use their art to bring us back something that can help us understand what we're all going to go through.
And you had Chuck Close's dyslexia and Mira Nye's growing up in rubble and Joel Meyerowitz finding the World Trade Center after 9/11 artistically compelling and Lynn Nottage, who wrote a play about brutality in the Congo Civil War. So let me talk to a couple of the visual artists calling up. Joel in Westchester, you're a painter?
Yes, among other things. But anyway.
May I ask, do you find inspiration more in the beautiful, more in the terrible, or more in the ordinary?
More in the, I would say, ordinary. Because sometimes I'll see a scene, and this is what I called about. Sometimes I'll see something, and I'll be taking my sketch stuff around, and I'll put something down on the paper, and it would be awful. I mean, you know, kind of for me structurally or whatever, and then that sort of starts a conversation. Uh-huh. Between me and the painting.
Between you and you. Joel, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you. Rachel in Manhattan, you're a composer?
Yeah, hi, Brian.
Hi. And can I ask, do you find inspiration for your music more in the beautiful, the terrible, or the ordinary?
Well, I think what comes to mind for me is, like, pain is a great motivator, but it also comes in exalted experiences. I mean, I compose in my sleep, so whatever comes through there.
What do you mean you compose in your sleep?
I'll wake up, or even while I'm dreaming, I'll be writing music, or I'll be hearing a symphony or a song, or sometimes I'll wake up and there'll be a song I'll be singing all morning, and I'll realize that it doesn't exist.
Do you get up at 3 in the morning and notate?
I do. I have a little micro cassette recorder near my bed. So I don't always do it, but I try to really commit to it. But it does take developing, you know, when I wake up.
Thank you very much. Kurt, have you heard that one before? People who literally compose in their sleep?
Or come up with scenes in films or what I have, and I'm always so jealous of them because my dreams are the most boring dreams on earth, by and large, and I never get any direct, explicit creative help from them. But yes, I would say that's not common, but it's not rare either. It is lots of people say exactly that thing.
I loved what the painter said, too, about getting into a conversation with himself, because I think that's a lot of what creativity is you put something
totally
out there, and then you criticize it or someone else criticizes it for you, and then you try something else. And that's part of the process. It's not coming out full-blown like a masterpiece. You have to keep working at it. It's hard work.
Let's get one more in here. It's Jane in Dumont, an actor. Hi, Jane.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. So,
great show.
Thinking and dreaming or getting down to work or riding the subway?
You know, none of the above, actually. I'm an actor who my survival job is also a job I love very much, which is teaching children acting and music.
Uh-huh.
So I find that when I need to write, I think about our writing process together. You know, children just have such a connection to thinking outside the box, and we write great stuff together. And then when I go to write my own pieces, I just think about the energy they give me. So I definitely need other people to...
So you're answering the alone or together question.
I am. I'm sorry.
That's great.
I know. That's a different...
No, that's great. Because some people are solitary and can make it up in their sleep, and some people need people in order to create... Can I ask you, as an actor, if
yes.
you think a little bit of violent insanity like Charlie Sheen... contributes to people's acting ability, or what do you think when
do
you
I think
look
it
at
contributes?
That?
No, not at all. I think anyone in any kind of job, some people have mental difficulties in any job, whether they be a factory worker or an actor. I mean, it's a job, and you know, I think creative people have more of an emotional base. Obviously, it's sometimes a burden, And it brings along with it struggles, a lot of struggles with anxiety or depression or ego, certainly. And so I don't. I actually would say that those two subjects are separate. Creativity and inspiration and that kind of acting out.
Thank you. Julie, you're smiling.
I am, because it is something I've been thinking a lot about. And I gave a talk in Dallas last week, and that was one of the questions is, do you have to be a little bit mad to create? And I think that there's been a lot of literature about that, and channeled the right way, it actually can be useful. But like any of us who may be a little bit mad, it can also be really difficult. So I don't think it's essential for creativity.
And then, Kurt, we get people like the actor James Franco, who hosts the Oscars on Saturday night and shows up for his doctoral class on Sunday night, I should say, and shows up for his Monday morning 9 o'clock medieval literature class at Yale in New Haven, Connecticut.
And he's probably doing better at Yale than he did on the Oscars. But he clearly embraces the idea of hard work and putting yourself into whatever various harnesses you need out of which creative work can come. And I think that's important to emphasize here. And it comes up again and again in Spark, in the book, that. There will be eureka moments. There will be inspirational leaps. But if you don't have the means and the times and places which you can fashion those into something that works as a piece of creative art and that people can embrace, then you're just going to be an interesting person.
I completely agree. I think that you need to be open to experience. You need to do something with it, and that's the key part of creativity.
And what Julie Burstein has done, besides helping to launch Studio 360 a decade ago and being its executive producer for most of that time, she has now written a book about creativity based on a lot of stuff that came up on the show called Spark, How Creativity Works. Kurt Anderson wrote the foreword and continues to host Studio 360. Thank you both.
Thank you, Kurt. I'll
be listening this weekend.
And thank you. I'll be there.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.